The devil whispered to the warrior, "You are not strong enough to withstand the storm." The warrior whispered back to the devil, "I am the storm."
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to I Am the Storm. Hopefully, all of you are having a great week. For me, the last week has been all about getting back to normal. Vacations are a lot of fun, and I definitely believe that they're necessary, but man, can they mess up your schedule. When Becky and I got back from vacation, my sleep schedule was messed up, I was behind on work. Like I mentioned last week's episode, I had to go away for the weekend, which turned out to be an awesome couple of days with my kids. So I certainly don't regret one little bit of anything that went on over the last couple of weeks. But as always, when all the fun's over, it's time to get back to business. I want to talk to you all today about the fact that, as Gavin DeGraw says, you don't have to be anyone other than who you want to be right now. I've always thought this song, while a lot of people would say it's not the most manliest of songs, is almost prophetic. You might be interested to know how many times in my life I've gone back to that song for so many different storms that have happened in my life. Through my fitness journeys throughout the year, every time I'm going to try and lose weight or get back in shape, or just when I make mistakes, veer off the path of where I think I'm supposed to be going. Life is all about making mistakes, falling down, but getting back up again and pressing forward. Now, the example that I'm using today is something that's relatively simple compared to other things in life. For me, I needed a reset after going on vacation, because when I left, I'd been working hard and had dropped 16 pounds. But after going to Mexico and then going to the cabin for the weekend, I spent about 4 days not working out at all, was eating bad food, and I'd gained 7 of those pounds back. Now, this episode is not about weight loss, but it's a good example, and you can parallel this to a lot of things in your life. Think about any setback, whatever storm you're facing right now. You start to make progress, you take 2 steps forward, and then you take 1 step back. Or worse yet, you take 1 step forward and then 2 steps back. It's easy to use that as an excuse to give up or stop. If what you're trying to do is lose weight, it's easy to look down at that scale and say, "See, it's not working and it's not worth it." But life's all about doing the hard things and never wasting a hurt. I woke up Monday morning of this week determined to gain back the ground that I had lost over the last week. But I was knocked down again when I started to do my first workout. I had already lost ground. I wasn't moving as fast, I was breathing heavier, and there were definitely times that I wanted to give up, that I hit that wall. But during one of my workouts, the trainer in the particular workout that I'm doing right now said something that struck me to my core. He said, "No matter who you are or what you're doing, you're going to hit a wall in life. And the results that you're looking for are on the other side of that wall." It's a simple statement, but it goes a long way. Now for me, that wall was the fact that I didn't want to do any more curls or any more squats because my muscles hurt and I was tired. But that wall could just as easily be things like trying to quit smoking or alcohol abuse or depression. Or it could be the topic of today's episode, dealing with anxiety. But the key is, no matter what your storm is, at some point during your journey, you're going to hit a wall. There's going to be hurt. There's going to be setbacks. The easy thing to do is going to be to stop. But instead, I want you to dig deep. Remember what your goal is, the goal that you set when you were in your right mind before you hit that wall. Decide that you're not going to be that broken and beat down person. You're going to stand up. You're going to knock the dust off. And you're going to go get those results on the other side of that wall. Other than what I've been trying to be lately. All I have to do is think of me and I have peace of mind. I'm tired of looking around rooms, wondering what I got to do or who I'm supposed to be. I don't want to be anything other than me. This week's storm is one that hits near and dear to my heart. I actually have several people that I'm very close to that suffer from this exact condition. And even just watching it from the outside, it is a very difficult storm to fight through. Imagine if every time you got into a car, you panicked. Or when you had to go into large social settings, your heart would race and you'd feel ill. Or what if sometimes, for no reason whatsoever, the limbic system center in your brain activated your fight or flight mentality and pulsed your body full of adrenaline and made you feel like you just need to get away from whatever the threat is? The problem is that you can't identify the threat. The storm we're talking about today is fighting through anxiety. And rather than read you an email, I'd like to welcome onto the show a very good friend of mine who has fought through this storm, came through on the other side, and still has to beat it back every single day. It's my honor and pleasure to welcome onto the show my friend, Tara Davis.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tara. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and I want to thank you for taking some time out of your Sunday to chat with me, and sorry for canceling last week, but things got a little crazy here back home.
Yeah, no problem. This works out.
So we'll get right into it, Tara. You and I spent some, I've known you for about a year now since you've worked with Becky. And we got to spend about a week together down in New Orleans at the summit, and it was the first time I really got a chance to get to know you. And right away, your story of what you fought through with your anxiety just really struck me. And as you know, that's something that is near and dear to my heart, and it is with so many people. But what impressed me so much when I was talking to you was that you spent the better part of your adult life. How many years, Tara, would you say it's been that you have fought with anxiety?
Well, it would be, let me see, you're making me tell my age. I'm just kidding. it's been about 20 years. So it ended about a year ago. So that would have been about 20 years. Mm-hmm.
So for 20 years, you fought through this, but you never gave up. You had ups and downs and you tried different solutions until you finally found what worked for you. So I think where I'd like to start, Tara, is to talk about where your anxiety began, because it began about the time you were at about graduating high school age. Is that right?
Right. A little bit after that. Yep. So graduated high school and was in a situation I didn't really want to be in. I was kind of forced to go to a university I didn't want to be at, but I ended up loving it after all, which is great. But basically, I was kicked out 2 months after I turned 19.
You were kicked out by your mother, right?
Sorry. Yes, I was kicked out by my mom. Yeah, I wasn't in the dorms or anything. And, it was shocking. And I was very ill-equipped to just be on my own. I mean, who really knows how to do that unexpectedly and at such a young age? And so, I did not have any family support in terms of finances, like whatsoever. And so I had to, learn how to, what do I do? I mean, I did have a job, but I had the sense to know that I didn't want to quit school. And so I wanted to maintain going to school full time and work part time. So I had to take out loans and, find roommates. And it was just very hard. And so the way my anxiety started manifesting was in school, test anxiety is what I thought. I never really had thought, I'm somebody who all of a sudden started having anxiety because of this situation. I wasn't connecting it then. And it really didn't connect it until many years later that that's really what just started my 20-year battle with this beast of anxiety.
So prior to 19 years old, did you suffer from any type of anxiety that you're aware of anyway?
No, okay. Never.
So everything was fine, 19 years old, but then immediately you have, now not most 19-year-olds think that they, know how to conquer the world, but most of us actually didn't. But you were kind of forced into that. So you were, all of a sudden, while experiencing college, now you had to start learning how to take care of your own finances and pay your own bills and find roommates. And I'm sure with you, for me, I know high school was super easy for me. And so when I walked into college, and it wasn't so much easy anymore. It was kind of a shock to the system too, for me. Did you experience any of that?
Not really so much. I was in half honors courses in high school, and I'm a pretty good student. I'm kind of a studious nerd, but I was already, like, I will say that that was the only time in my life I was experiencing a little depression just that year. And it was because of, you know, tumultuous situation at home. I was in a university, which is a whole nother story, that I didn't want to be in. I was kind of forced into going there and not going to where I really wanted to go. And so I flunked out my whole first year. I completely just didn't go. It wasn't like I was going and trying and getting bad grades. I just wasn't, I wouldn't go.
Okay. Was that after you were thrown out of mom's house, or did that come after flunking out of college?
I'll tell you the dates. So I started school in September of 96, and then I was kicked out in February.
Okay. So during the middle of your freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
So a whole lot of stressors happening at once. Now you're not doing well with college. You're feeling some depression. You've left home. You've got financial issues. And you had said that your first bout with anxiety, you thought it was test anxiety.
Right. And I know that that wasn't even my first year that I noticed the testing part happen. You know, the first 2 years, I'd say I was just really struggling with crying and being really angry, I think, about my situation and what was happening and how no one was really helping me as far as like my two parents. And I think I was just kind of a mess. So I was seeking out counseling on the campus, and it was not as helpful as I would have liked it to be, but I just kept going.
You said you had told me before that during your testing is when you started experiencing this really bad anxiety that you were attributing to the test anxiety. Like, what were you, were they physical symptoms, or what was it that you were experiencing?
Yeah, it was physical symptoms. So I remember sitting, and it was a small classroom. It wasn't a lecture hall. It was just a regular classroom. I sat in the front row because I was like, oh, I'm confident.
Nerd.
I know exactly what I'm doing. The test was on Moby Dick, I remember, because I was an English major. And so I remember getting the test passed out and looking down at it, and it looked like the letters were swimming on the page. And I started to like get a panicky feeling, and my heart started pounding, and I was like, what the freak is happening to me? And I couldn't breathe well, and tears started pouring out of my eyes, and I just kept my head down, and I was like, I don't want to make a scene. So I just got up and walked out, went down to the restroom, had a, I guess what now I know is a panic attack in the restroom, tried to really hold it together, because I left my stuff in the class. That was brilliant. And so I had to walk back after that, and I still wasn't really settled down. And my professor met me in the hall, and she said, I know what's going on. Do not worry about this test. I will put it in my office. You can take it later. And then we had some other conversations about how to deal with that from her. But I really, at that time, just thought it was a test anxiety.
So did you battle with it all the way through college?
I did. It wasn't always as severe, but that testing anxiety would always kind of creep up on me. It didn't always manifest into panic attacks, but it definitely was always there. Mm-hmm. And it probably resurfaced again after I got married and had two miscarriages. And that's when it, I guess, I don't know what the words are, but maybe flared up, or it was like peaking again.
Right. Another trigger for it. It's interesting. I guess as a little sidebar right here, because I've been studying a lot about anxiety. It's an interesting combination here. So I study human behavior for my work with the truth and justice stuff, with investigations, everything from, you know, crime scene reconstruction and profiling to reading people's body language when I'm interviewing them. And and so I've studied a lot about the limbic system of the brain, which is like the prehistoric center of your brain. And that's what you hear the fight or flight mentality, which is really freeze, fight, or flight. But that's a topic for a whole other day. But it is the prehistoric responses of your body from that center, the limbic center of your brain. It's how we read when people are uncomfortable, or they're feeling triumphant, or they're ready to get out of here when we're interviewing someone. But I've learned that some of the things I'm learning there are parallel while learning about anxiety, because typically what's happening, from what my understanding from the research I've done, is if something scares you, if I jump out in front of you and say, boo, your limbic system starts shooting, telling your body to send out adrenaline. We're either going to fight or we're going to run. It gives you this state of what's normal, what we would consider normal panic. And then we get through that because the cognitive centers of your brain are able to identify what's scaring you. The big bearded man that said boo scared me. And so you get, but what happens with a lot of times with panic attacks is something is triggered in you and you get that same adrenaline rush, all the feelings you get when you're excited or panicked, except for there's nothing that you can put your finger on as to what caused the panic, and it causes you to like snowball and panic further. And it's a long rambling sidebar for me, but the point for me was when you said you kind of identified, you thought that it was test anxiety. Then when you go into the test and you, because as time went on, I mean, did it get better? Because what I've been experimenting with the people close to me that deal with anxiety is if they can, you know, for example, you know, when they get into a car, they get real anxiety in cars. And so we'll have that talk like, okay, where are we at right now? We're in a car. Where do you always have panic attacks? In the car. Okay, is it possible what you're feeling isn't that you're going to throw up or have a heart attack? Is it possible you're feeling this because you're in a car? And once they can kind of like identify that, they start working through it and come out of it. And do you think that had anything, or am I just nutso right now? Or do you think that had anything to do with like the testing where like you knew I panic at tests? And once you're able to identify that, does it help you get through it? I'm just kind of asking for me, really.
I think it did, and you can learn some coping mechanisms to help with that. If you haven't looked up, like certain deep breathing exercises can definitely help with that, like prior. So you can do, there are some you can do prior. So like your friend that experiences this while in a vehicle, they can do some of these deep breathing exercises before, during, and after. Some of them are physical as far as like someone would know that they were doing them, because there's like one that's called like five finger breathing, and you trace your fingers and you breathe in and out up one side of the finger, you kind of trace it with your other hand. So you would want to do that in private. There's some that you can do, like if the person's in a car, they can do some deep breathing exercises while they're in there. And I think having like words that you tell yourself, kind of learning to talk yourself down, having some phrases when you're in the moment and repeating them. And that might sound silly to some people, but words are really powerful. If you can stop your thoughts in your tracks, it'll help. It all works together.
And what you just said is to the point where you said that, you know, it sounds silly, but it's important to point out that if you don't suffer, because I don't, out there, I don't suffer from anxiety personally. And if you don't suffer from anxiety, it is so hard to understand someone. Like, you want to try to, but it's so hard to get what's going on with them, because there's just no way you can understand something that you've never experienced like that. And so that's important for any of you listening that maybe have family members or friends that deal with anxiety. Is I always want to break things down logically, and it's like, well, why are you doing that? This is the situation, but it's got nothing to do with logic. So that's just, I guess, the continuation of my sidebar there. And but so moving forward, you mentioned that because you and I talked a little bit prior to this, and you were really touched by the infertility episode, because that's something that you now luckily you've been blessed. You have two wonderful boys now, but you went through quite a struggle with infertility. And is that when the anxiety really started to manifest the most?
Yes, I definitely. I mean, that's the second. I can identify like three different times. One of them is after we had kids as well. But yeah, our infertility struggle was pretty hardcore. I related to pretty much almost everything that was said in that segment. And so basically I got pregnant on our wedding night. I know for sure. and I was up to 13 weeks, which is, you know, you're just out of the first trimester, and then the heartbeat wasn't there. So it was very devastating. I had to have a surgery. It was just devastating. And so that happened. And then about a year later, around the same time, it happened again, but in a totally different way. And so I had another miscarriage, which is called a chemical miscarriage. So it was way early on in the pregnancy. And that's really when my anxiety got just so out of control. And, you know, symptoms that you couldn't even believe. I mean, I was, you know, at that time I was already teaching. I was a professional, and I was having such bizarre physical symptoms, emotional symptoms. Like I had that feeling of free fall all the time, like you're on a roller coaster in that drop. That's how I felt 24/7. It was the worst feeling I can try to explain to you, and it was frustrating because you can't control it. So you don't want it to be there. You want it to go away. You're frustrated, but then yet it produces almost like a kind of like a fearful feeling. I had shortness of breath. At the time we had two dogs. I didn't want to leave the house and I didn't want to leave my dogs. Like it was so insane. And, you know, a lot of crying. And I know that hormones are super affected from being pregnant and then not pregnant. That happens even if you do have your baby and everything goes well. And so I kept telling my doctor, you know, something's wrong. Please check my hormones. And he was a little bit dismissive and gave me a printout of something that totally didn't match my symptoms. It was like women who have like rage. And I was like, no, I don't really have rage. So luckily I had somebody in my life at the time who really came alongside me. And I just said, I can't do this. I mean, I literally couldn't stop crying. And it wasn't, yes, I was mourning the loss of the baby, but at the same time, it was just like all the time. Like I couldn't stop it physically. It was so frustrating. And I, you know, ultimately went in, I got put on Zoloft, and, you know, I just didn't even have the luxury of saying, well, I don't really know if I want to take this. I mean, it was just so bad, Bob, that I just was like, sure, I'll try it. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate that within 3 days, I felt like my normal self. I just didn't have any of those physical symptoms anymore. I was able to sleep. I was able to breathe properly. I didn't have any of those feelings. I didn't feel like a zombie or anything. I felt just normal. And it was great. I was so excited. I was happy. I knew I didn't want to be on the medicine my entire life. My plan was to wean off. And, you know, it causes a lot of weight gain. And so that's another thing I had to deal with on the side. So I was on that about a year, and then I weaned off and was able to get pregnant eventually.
All right, then you had, I think you had told me that you had then a few years there where you had the babies, where things were going, where you didn't really suffer from the anxiety, or were you right during those few years?
So I weaned off the Zoloft. There's a lot of other things. I was doing the Clomid and I was doing all of that stuff. And so I kind of just said, I don't want to do this anymore. It was driving me crazy. So for the women that have those infertility issues and they're going through all that, it's extremely stressful because it's on your mind 24/7. But I just said, I'm done. I can't do this. I think it's adding to anxiety, even though my physical symptoms were gone. And I quit it all and I started weaning. You have to wean with the doctor's supervision. So there's a plan. You can't just stop taking pills. It's very harmful if you do that. So I did that. And I think with just me just living my life like a normal person, and plus I was very frustrated with the weight gain that was caused by those pills. I just started, you know, exercising at the time, and I got pregnant and I had a great pregnancy. I delivered, I lost all the weight, including the weight from the antidepressants, and I didn't experience the anxiety again until after my second son, after I was done nursing him. And I had a feeling that my hormones were going to get out of whack because, you know, I had been pregnant kind of back to back, not totally back to back, but they're 23 months apart. So I was like basically pregnant or nursing for a very long time. And I just had a feeling my hormones were going to go wacko. And they did. I just didn't know it was going to manifest in such severe anxiety again. That's what happened, which is like within these last 4 years.
What physical anxiety symptoms were you experiencing? What was life like living with that anxiety during those 4 years?
It was horrible. I would wake up, like the second I would open my eyes, whether I woke up to an alarm or not, I would have immediate heart palpitations and shortness of breath, almost like you're gasping for breath. Just immediately, with not even with any harmful thoughts or scary thoughts in my mind about anything, just being a person. I mean, and it was frustrating. I would just cry uncontrollably for no reason, not even necessarily with a trigger. I mean, you can imagine how hard that was for my husband too, because, you know, he couldn't help me. And that even hurt me more because I knew he wanted to help me, and then I would feel even worse. And trying to manage that as a mom and a working mom, I was working part-time. I was part-time teaching. that was really hard because there were times when it got so bad where I would just like, oh my gosh, I could feel it coming on. Like I was going to start crying. And I was like, no, like don't happen. You know, my kids are here. I need to be for them. I love my kids and I don't want them to see it because they freak out. Or they don't freak out, but they feel sad. And they're like, what's wrong, mommy? And it was just the most frustrating, horrible thing. And doctors weren't really helping me. I mean, I got lots of blood panels testing vitamin D and testing thyroid levels. And doctors also being kind of dismissive saying, well, I just kind of think you probably just need therapy. You know,
right.
Like, oh my gosh, like there's something physical going on inside me.
You know, I had a friend that's very close to me tell me recently who suffers through some anxiety and depression issues. He just said, Bob, you can't understand what it's like to get up in the morning for him. And say he gets up in the morning and has to tell himself, I have a good job. I have great friends. I'm in a great relationship. I have great family. I have a great living situation. So there's no reason for me to be sad. And that's what he described it because he lives with a lot of depression and anxiety where it's like he knows, his brain knows everything's good, but feels like just like the world is crashing down on him at all times. And it sounds like that's a lot of kind of what you were going through where, you know, you had your babies and you've got and I know you still have him, great husband. And you know, and all these things and a good job and all this stuff. And it's like, so for someone to tell you, well, you just need, not that I'm against therapy or counseling. I'm not, obviously. I think that it can be very helpful. But at some point you think maybe there's something physically happening here.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't really have depression. So even though, and this sounds very strange, but even though I would have these crying fits, they weren't really linked to sadness, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I think people with depression can have anxiety as well. But if you have anxiety, it doesn't necessarily mean you have depression as well.
Yeah. And this is the part of the story that impresses me so much where Tara is now the hero. Because, and I say that because Tara, the whole idea of becoming the storm, right? And so obviously this anxiety was Tara's storm. And instead of just letting it just beat down her life, took charge and took control and started identity. The doctors aren't helping. Husband would love to help, but can't help. And just nothing's working. But you decided that you were going to figure out what was wrong. And you identified a few things in your life. One was Tara had to cut me, Bob Ruff, out of her life.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But so. Really, but I mean, briefly, one of the things that you had told me that you realized you had to cut out was you were really into true crime and any social justice stuff and podcasts and things. Mine was one of them. And your kind of social media life on Twitter. And things were, I mean, I'll let you briefly kind of break that down, but things were getting where that was stressing you out and you identified it as a stressor and walked away from it.
Right. If you're dealing with anxiety, we have to consider that there's a biological aspect, you know, and some people do just have biology where, I mean, there's so much you can learn about how the brain works and the way that certain things fire in your brain. And that's where antidepressants or those can come in to play as far as like helping your brain just literally work properly. It'd be like any other disorder or any other physical symptom where, you know, like if you have a low thyroid, you might need a thyroid med to, you know, level that out. But my opinion is I really believe in like the holistic approach. So you can't just treat the biology. And that's why I knew I was like, I just don't want to be on these pills my whole life if I don't have to. Now, if I have a biology that just doesn't work without them, then I would deal with that. So biologically, environmentally, and spiritually, emotionally, and you were talking about the environmental, I started to realize there were some things environmentally that may be contributing to my anxiety at the time. In hindsight, I don't really believe that it was, and I actually know, just talking to you right now, it's not actually the podcast. It wasn't the podcasts or the topics of the podcast, because I'm still very much into them and I still use them in my classroom today. For me, it was the social media surrounding the podcasts. And it was because I got very involved. I mean, I'm like an all or nothing person. I'm either all in or I'm not. And so I was so all in, like on Twitter, and lots of really lovely people and communities there surrounding cases that I still, you know, have contact with today. But then there are lots of not so lovely people, which you know.
Right.
And part of it could have been the topic too, not the true crime, more when it started to get into like politics and how people just started branching off. And then it was just like one movement after another of pretty much everything being negative. Even if you think you have maybe an obligation or you have a drive to want to like inform people, which is, I think some people have the guise of that. They want to inform people, but they really actually have an ulterior motive and a stance. And it's really largely negative a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I was going to back away from all of it. And for me, that just meant completely exiting Twitter at the time. It meant I made a conscious decision actually right before I reached out to Becky that I would never put a negative post or potentially inflammatory post up on any of my social medias, Instagram, Twitter, you know, Facebook, whatever, because I was really thinking more of other people at that time, because I was thinking of how it could push them away and how people online had pushed me away. And so I was like, gosh, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be their negative person. It just was like a whole shift in my environment on everything being positive, because I needed that at the time. And I would just unfollow people if they were like really negative or bugging me, or if I wanted to quote unquote remain friends with them, I would just make it so I couldn't see their posts in my feed.
You identified something that was a negative and cut it off. And then what I really love, it goes back to a couple weeks ago when Parker gave everybody their homework about choosing happy.
Choose happy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where it was like, do you know how powerful it is for not just you, but so many other people just to make a decision? Like, I'm not going to put anything negative on social media. Like something that simple that has a ripple effect. You addressed your environmental issues. And then you moved on to your biological issues, where you started looking at there was, you know, something, because you had said earlier that you had tested for, and, you know, I know I'm kind of leading because I know the story, but you had done testing for like vitamin D deficiencies and thyroid panels and all these different things. Mm-hmm. But rather than listen to the doctor, you just knew there was something missing from your nutrition. And you found it in a milkshake.
Yeah, I mean, I did, and they just weren't hearing me, and I was pretty healthy. Like I told you, like I was very healthy. I had, and I'm not saying that you need to cut out gluten or dairy to be healthy, but because my weight would not change no matter what I did, and I was working out and I was eating healthy, I was like, let me try cutting out gluten, because that can actually be something that disrupts your thyroid if you have a thyroid issue. So I tried cutting out gluten, didn't lose a pound. Tried cutting out dairy. I felt better because I'm lactose intolerant. I shouldn't have had it anyway. So I've just remained dairy and gluten free. But nothing was changing with the anxiety or the weight. And that's where I was like, okay, there's got to be something else, right? So when I started my new health and fitness journey, it really focuses on the macronutrients and micronutrients. And the shake is what fills in the micronutrients, and the macronutrients are just basically eating whole foods like fats, healthy fats, proteins, carbs, and veggies and fruits. And that combination of eating in that way and using this, you know, the superfood shake, it just literally within 4 weeks, I was like, whoa, I woke. And that was something I didn't expect. It was shocking to me. I was like surprised, because after 20 years, you don't really expect there to be a change.
Right. It kind of, for you, it was kind of, if I remember correctly, was, and so I want to make sure a point of this isn't a commercial for Shakeology. This just happened to be what worked for Tara with her nutrition, but you weren't taking the Shakeology to try to fix your anxiety. You were just trying the new.
No, actually it had nothing to do with that. I was desperate to lose weight at the time. Okay, so I reached out to Becky on a post on anxiety, not because I saw her amazing transformation. That was great, but I was like desperate with my anxiety. But at the same time, I was like, well, maybe just getting healthy in a different way will help me, because now I'm kind of like focusing on being positive. And this really worked for this lady. And so I was like, following the rules really is what I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the rules were like, you know, push play every day on this 25-minute workout. Hey, I can do that. And, you know, drink this superfood shake and carry on with life and still be, you know, healthy in other ways. But
Right. That's
all I was doing. I was just following the rules because I was like paying for it, you know? So I was like, I'm just going to do what she tells me to do.
And for you, it had an amazing side effect, is that it seems that you've been, and disclaimer, I want to make sure we're not trying to tell people that there's a shake that anybody's going to take that's going to cure anxiety. But for you, whatever your body was missing that was in that particular shake seems to have cured your anxiety.
Yeah. And like I always say, like, I will never tell people, like, do what I do and your anxiety will go away. You can't do that with really any, you know, I don't want to say disease, but, like, you know, any physical symptoms or ailments that people have, you know,
right.
People are so unique. Situations are so unique, and we have to be able to come alongside them. And it, like you said, it's really hard to understand when their circumstances are not like yours, even for me.
Right.
So even when other people have anxiety, you just have to be patient, listen to them, because I can't claim that this will do that for anybody else. In fact, I have other friends that do it and they still have that anxiety. I have one friend that actually found out she had a potassium deficiency and that was causing her heart palpitations. So you just don't know. But I think that from a health perspective, whatever you can do to aid your body in being the healthiest it can be is so worth it.
So the bigger picture as we kind of bring things to the close is, so that was your struggle, your storm, your journey, and how you became the storm you were able to fight past. Now, since then, that's been about a year ago since you cut off the social media, the negative stuff on social media, make sure any post you make on social media is positive, and change your diet, added the superfood shake to yours. How has your anxiety been for the last 12 months?
It's gone. So, like, after the 4 weeks when I first started, I noticed I would have calculated, and this is obviously a random percent, but I said it was like 90% gone. So I wasn't waking up with palpitations. I hadn't cried at all since I started. I didn't really have the shortness of breath. And in the 4 weeks, I'd say there was like a few times in the afternoon where I'd have like a little bit of halt palpitations and it would just go away like within 10 seconds. So I was like, this is a huge drastic difference. After 8 weeks, I didn't have any of that because it was completely gone. And that's when I was like, wow, there's something that really helped me in this and I'm not going to change that. I'm going to keep going. But I have to be honest, every day I would wake up for the longest time within a year and wonder if it was going to come back because I was like, is this just some fluke?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I had dealt with it for so long that I was like, how is this possible? And no, it hasn't ever come back. That doesn't mean I don't have feelings.
Right.
I still have feelings. I'm still a woman. I still deal with that stuff. But no, like, none of this irrational anxiety that doesn't make sense. It didn't come up. I mean, there's still times where I get, you know, I'm like maybe nervous about something, but I think those things are natural. Like you said, the fight or flight, those things are natural. Your brain wants to be comfortable.
Well, if somebody jumps out in front of you and says boo, you're going to get scared, you know? So it's like, you know, there are certain time for that. But so the reason I wanted to bring you on, Tara, is number one, to tell your story, because it's such an incredible story to me. And it's hope for those of you and myself included, because this is something that does affect me personally, to give hope, to say that, you know, you're not condemned to deal with this for your entire life, that there could be, there's definitely ways to help manage anxiety, and there's ways to, you know, there could be solutions for some or a lot of people that could really cut out a lot of the symptoms without medications, because I know a lot of people just don't want to take the medication, and some people need them. Mm-hmm. But what I'd like to do going forward, Tara, if you're willing, like we've done in the past, I'm going to create a new private group on the Bob Ruff Wellness by Storm Facebook page for people fighting through anxiety. And what I'd like to do is make you an admin and give you the opportunity to run it the way you want to run it, and make other admins, and can be involved as much or as little as you want to. But will you be willing to help get that group started by being the admin?
Yes, absolutely. That would be awesome.
That's great. And I think that's a perfect time to cut things off right now, Tara. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to share your storm with us. And I want to congratulate you on becoming the storm, taking charge of your life, not letting the doctors and everyone tell you how to feel, but knowing that you know your body better than anyone else and coming out on the other side stronger than you were when you began. If anxiety is your storm, please, after you're done listening to this episode, by the time this drops, it should be up on the Facebook page. Go onto our Facebook page and join the Fighting Through Anxiety private group. And as always, even if you are someone who has already overcome anxiety or have found great solutions, then you will be a great resource for other people who are fighting through this exact same storm. This week was really difficult to decide how to present this episode because I've received so many different emails from so many different people that are dealing with anxiety. And what I'm noticing is everyone has a completely different story. Some people have certain triggers. Some people have suffered through it their entire life. People have remedies that have worked for them, whether it be natural remedies or medications, physical activity, or in Tara's case, certain vitamins, as well as cutting things out of her life. What I'm finding is that anxiety is very different for everyone who has it. There are certainly parts of it that stay the same from person to person to person, but the actual physical symptoms and the emotional trauma that comes along with anxiety can be very different with everyone. So Tara's storm or her story is just one example of how anxiety can manifest itself and how a person can take control of that situation and become the storm. I Am the Storm is a production of NBI Studios. Executive producer is Mike Bussing. All the music for the show was created by PutThemInASong.com. Our logo art was created by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. If you'd like to submit your storm to be discussed on the show, send me an email to storm@nbistudios.com. That's NBI Studios like New Beginning Incorporated. storm@nbistudios.com. Make sure you follow along on our Facebook page, Bob Ruff Wellness by Storm. If you're a tweeter, you can follow along on Twitter, @IAmTheStormPod. However you do it, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get involved, get engaged, be the storm. But until next week, I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been I Am the Storm.